Now we are very pleased to introduce our keynote speaker for today's event. Mark Allen is an internationally renowned author, president, and publisher of New World Library. As an author, he has written many books, including The Greatest Secret of All and The Type Z Guide to Success. He is a well-known musician as well and composer, having produced 5 albums of music for his own label, Watercourse Media. He lives in Northern California with his wife and 2 children. Mark and his wife, Aurilene, have founded the Brazil Hope Foundation to help street kids in Brazil. He will be talking about spiritual path to success.
This topic is the spiritual path to success. There's a lot of conflict and confusion about success. Didn't we hear some words against materialism? Isn't the truly spiritual person non-materialistic? I know all through my 20s I was totally confused about these things. Completely confused. I saw the movie Brother, Son, Sister, Moon about St. Francis 7 times through my 20s. And I really tried to be just like St. Francis. And St. Francis, at least in the movie, completely rejects his father's business. And he even gives his father his clothes back, and he walks out of town naked. And it has nothing to do with money or materialism. Somebody in the next scene gives him a robe, and he goes on to live a life that has nothing to do with money. And I tried that through my 20s. I made a valiant effort, I must say. I tried for 10 years to be spiritual, to be on a spiritual path. I went to one group after another, studied with one teacher after another, all kinds of things that were actually very good for me, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Very good for me. But I was broke. I had to pay the rent every month, and I was scrounging, a word we used all the time, scrounging to pay the rent. It was sort of cool in my 20s, somehow, to be a poverty case spiritual type. It was kind of cool. The day I turned 30, I will never forget, because that's the day that changed my life. I woke up in a state of shock, realizing I was 30. And that's how I heard it in my head. You're 30. You're not a kid anymore. Somehow through my 20s, I could believe that I was a teenager and be irresponsible. And it was cool to do yard work here and there, and to be I was a busboy and dishwasher for 2 days before I got fired for being too slow. Yard work, I lasted 1 day. I learned typesetting. I had a skill, but I got fired for not showing up on time. Every month I was scrounging to come up with $65 rent for this little hole in the wall in Oakland, California. Little one-room place, bars on the windows, not a nice neighborhood. I remember thinking it was kind of magical the way that $65 did appear every month. I just made it. I might have $35 and one more day, and a friend would call and say, "Hey, I need help moving. I'll give you $30. It was like that every month. I remember thinking, this is kind of magical. I didn't know it, but I was visualizing exactly what I needed, $65 a month. I would just come up with it. You know, but that's all I was visualizing. My friend Shakti Gawain, she reminded me the other day. She said she remembered me getting up in the morning, and first thing I'd say is, I need to get a buck and a quarter together for a latte. And that was my visualization for the first thing in the morning. How do I get a buck and a quarter together? This is what I was focused on. This is what my creative energy was focused on. And it was okay in my 20s. It was fine. But the day I turned 30, it was no longer okay. So let me backtrack with one thing about, well, I was thinking about spiritism and I never had to come to believe in any of this through all my spiritual studies in my 20s. It was all just obvious. And I know so many people had to like make a leap of faith or come to believe that we are spirit or something. I had the fortunate experience when I was 21 of nearly dying on stage one time. I was in a play. I was playing Faust, of all things. We did a wild adaptation of the Faust legend, the man searching for wisdom and knowledge. And we all played him at different points. And I played him when he was the man of science who was persecuted for his discoveries, like Galileo. And they hung me on stage. They threw me off a big scaffold. It was very dramatic. And they had rigged the ropes so I wasn't supposed to hang. But the last time I did it, the first time we ever played in California, interestingly enough, the last time I did it, the ropes were out of something, adjustment, and I was really hanging. I was thrown off the platform. The rope hit my neck, and I don't even remember the rope hitting my neck. I remember soaring over these green fields, soaring, having this wonderful, ecstatic feeling. This wonderful feeling, ecstasy doesn't even describe it. This feeling of bathing in an ocean of love and light and wonder and flying. I was flying along over these hills studded with oak trees, looked beautiful, beautiful, flying. And I remember thinking, wait, I don't have a body. I remember even looking around like this. Where's my body? I had no body. I had thoughts. I had consciousness. I even kind of had feelings. I started hitting sort of turbulence in my flight, like on a plane. I was totally aware. I was completely as conscious as I am now. Completely as conscious. I remember it vividly. I hit my turbulence. Then I started finding myself in this funnel, and I was going around and around, and I saw a surface of a funnel, and I remember thinking, oh, if I had a stomach right now, I'd be kind of sick to my stomach, because I was going around in this circle, and I was totally aware, and I knew I was on to another great adventure, and it was ecstatic and wonderful and euphoric, and I willed myself up toward where the light was coming. The light was coming. But then I got detoured and I was staring into the face of the director who noticed I was dying on stage. Because normally for the next scene I would be just hanging there motionless. But I was spazzing all around and my head was turning blue and I was dying. The audience thought, oh, what a great effect. This is great theater. They almost watched a snuff play. They didn't know it though. So, but my director got me, and then I was staring in his face, and he brought me down. He carried me down. Fortunately, he was very strong. Laid me on the stage, and I remember thinking, "Who am I?" I'd already forgotten. What is this life about? Oh, and it slowly came. Oh, I'm Mark Allen. Oh, I have this life. I'm an actor. How silly. I remember it felt totally silly to be an actor, spouting other people's lines. And I didn't want to go back. It really felt, the image I have, it's hard to put into words, but it felt like I was on to graduate school and they snatched me and said, back to kindergarten, kid. You go back to kindergarten. That's really what it felt like. I felt, oh, I don't want to go back. I'm on my way. But like this inner knowingness said, no, you've got to come back. You have a lot to do this life. And I will never forget that experience because I became pure spirit and I had an experience of it. So I knew I was spirit. After that, I left the theater because I sensed I had something more important to do. Spirit started talking to me. Spirit told me it was time not to say other people's words anymore. It was time to say my own words. I played all kinds of music. Spirit said, it's time to play your music. Well, first, as a musician, you learn other people's music. You learn cover tunes. Then you reach a point where you want to play your own music. I had that powerful experience of Spirit that I've never forgotten. I can even maybe try to give you an experience of what I had. That would be wonderful, far better than just you hearing a bunch of words. A few years later, I went to a Zen center, and I meditated for 5.5 months before I got kicked out for breaking the rules. They had all these rules, so. But I remember I followed my girlfriend there, and after a couple of months, she wanted to leave, and she left. And I needed to stay. I just knew intuitively I hadn't learned what I was there for yet. So I stayed, and she left. And she went walking down the road with her little backpack, I remember. And then, doom, the bell rang for meditation. And I went and sat in Zen meditation, and I realized I was having a shouting match with myself in my brain that I was hardly aware of until I was sitting there. One part of me was saying, you idiot, what are you doing? Why did you let her leave? Why didn't you go with her? She'll be sleeping with somebody else in 48 hours. You know that. She's just too beautiful. All these guys are hitting on her all the time. And you know her. You know, she's going to have another guy in 48 hours. That's what one voice was saying. Another voice was saying, much quieter, saying, I know, but for some reason I'm supposed to be here, and I don't even know why. Don't let her go. Blah, blah, blah. And I had all this mental turmoil. I'm sitting there and doing my Zen meditation. And then, and I encourage you to just sit and see if you can feel this or imagine this. It felt like almost the odd image I had was an egg breaking on my head, or like a tap on my head. But it felt more like an egg. It was enough of a tap. Something tapped me on the head to get me out of my arguing. And there was this tap, and it felt like almost this viscous substance, or this, it felt like an egg almost going down from the top of my head. And I realized, at the top of our head, we can all imagine just pure spirit. We are pure spirit. We have what they call in the East our crown chakra that is connected with spirit. And the crown, from the crown chakra, the pure spirit just filtered slowly down. Just feel that energy at the top of your head, and then feel the light just slowly, as you breathe, filter down through your whole body until you're just filled with spirit. We are spirit. I've come to know that. I don't have to believe it. I never made a leap of faith. I experienced it. And I sat there in the meditation and realized all my thoughts about you should be with her, all this battle was gone. All thoughts had gone. And I was just sitting there in peace. Peace. And I realized that's what I want more than anything in life. More than any kind of success, I want inner peace. Yes. Don't we all? Don't we all want inner peace? So I'll fast forward again back to turning 30 and being a total poverty case and realizing I was very frustrated with it. And so I spent most of that day pacing up and down my little apartment. I couldn't have a party. Some friend said, you should have a party at 30. No way. I need to be alone. And I started pacing up and down. And then I asked for guidance. I asked for guidance. What? And for the first time, I even asked, what do I want to do with my life? I realized I hadn't really clearly defined it. I'd been sort of following other stronger people around. I've been sort of doing what was expected and then following people to this and that place. I hadn't really even defined what success was for me. So I paced up and down and started talking to myself. And it is spirit that guides you when you start talking. When you start praying, you do receive answers. Ask and you shall receive. That's so true. Jesus gave us the absolute key to success when he said, ask and you shall receive. One day I was walking around my house. I have a big house now. I did receive exactly what I asked for. And I thought about that, ask and you shall receive. And I was thinking even, do I deserve this? Do I deserve this level of success? And I got, Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. He didn't say, ask and you shall receive if you deserve it. Or if you work hard enough. Or if you're intelligent enough. Or educated enough. He didn't say that. Or talented enough. No. He said, ask and you shall receive. Seek and you will find. With absolute authority. That's what Jesus said. And that really helped me. That was really a breakthrough. Oh. After one talk, a woman said to me, Mark, bottom line, are you saying, can anybody succeed? And I thought for one second, I said, yeah. And she said, why don't more people succeed? And I said, the key to what I discovered when I turned 30 then. I said, well, how many people do you know that really dare to dream of success and really define what it means for them? Success isn't materialism. Or if you think it is, you'll find it's not when you get the stuff and you'll find that doesn't make you happy or fulfilled whatsoever. No. But everyone in their heart has some dream. Some dream. Success is fulfillment of that dream. That's what it is. And I said to the woman, how many people really dare to dream their greatest dream? Of those that do, how many put it on paper? How many put their dream and goal on paper and then make a written plan to reach that goal? That's the key I discovered the day I turned 30. A written plan. I found out the plan doesn't even have to be that good. The plan will change and can change. As long as you make a written plan and take those first steps. How many people actually do that? And then the other thing is dealing with the doubts and fears that come up and let them come up and deal with them and keep returning to that goal, keep coming back to that goal. That is the simple little system, the simple little spiritual path to success I discovered the day I turned 30 is the same thing I still teach today and talk about and write about. It's a very simple little system. The older I get, the more simpler I can express it. And I think the simpler the better. I've come to realize, yes, we all can succeed. We all have all the tools we need. We have this amazing body with a trillion cells working together in perfect partnership. We have this phenomenal mind it's unlimited. We haven't even begun to use a tiny portion of our mind. Well, we have begun to use a tiny portion, but Eckhart Tolle says in 1,000 years they'll still be studying the human body and human mind and won't have comprehended its wonders and vastness. We all have this amazing body and mind, and we all have this connection to spirit. We all have it. It is who we are, in fact. So all we need to do is focus our body and mind in the right direction. That's all. We all have the tools we need. I'm convinced of that. We all have everything we need. I found that the day I turned 30. I kind of wish I had time to make you aware of what a space case I was at 30. In fact, still am at certain points. And like how bad my memory is and how unorganized I am and how untogether I am in so many ways. I mean, I amaze my wife sometimes. at how untogether I am and how bad my memory is. And I wish I could just list you all my faults and shortcomings, because they really encourage people, saying, if that space case musician can succeed pretty substantially financially, gee, then I should be able to too. I got it far more together. Most people are way more organized than I am. A lot of people are smarter than I am. I'm not that smart. I really am not at all. Most of my friends are way more intelligent. Most of them are a lot poorer too. They don't quite get what I got. It does not require intelligence at all. It doesn't even require much talent. It does require thinking about what success means to you, what you really want in life. I fortunately was born knowing it was important to do what I love, or at least I got it early growing up. I had two older brothers. One, the oldest, did everything the parents wanted. He was an athlete, he studied business, he went into the big corporation as an executive, had the perfect wife and kids, and did the perfect thing. But he wasn't passionate about his work. You know, I could just see he wasn't. He was passionate about golf and fishing. That's where he lights up. Late in life, he got into a work that he was passionate about. But all his life, most of his life, he was not passionate about his work. Well, my next brother came along, and he rebelled against it all. The first brother was a parent's dream. The second was a parent's nightmare. Sex, drugs, rock and roll at 15, stole the family car, blah, blah, blah. He was a nightmare. Barely graduated from high school. He was the rebel. And I got subconsciously, it doesn't do any good to do what your parents want you to, unfortunately, because you have to do what you love. But it also doesn't do any good to fight them either. Because when you rebel against something, you are empowering that thing you're rebelling against. My brother empowered my parents' values that he was fighting against. I came along, I thought, why rebel? Just do my thing, that's all. I just did my thing. I became an actor and a musician. And my dad said to my brothers, Mark is so slippery. I can't control him, he's slippery. Because I didn't fight him. I just did my thing. So I knew it was essential to do what I loved. That has served me very well. Some people take years to learn that. But it's never too late. It's never too late. Grandma Moses didn't pick up a paintbrush till she was 65. And she became a world-renowned artist. So it is never too late to do what you're passionate about. So I came along. I knew it was important to do what I loved. But I had no idea how to be successful doing what I loved. So through my 20s, I was an actor and a musician, a spiritual seeker, and total poverty case. And it was that day I turned 30. I paced up and down, and here's what did it for me. Here's the simple little thing that everybody can do. I also, in my early 20s, had a back-to-the-land experiment, which was a total disaster. I lasted about 5 months in this cold, rainy winter in the country in Oregon. But I remembered one night, we were sitting around a fire, and this one couple said, let's play this game we play at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years have passed, and everything has gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like? Well, we all went around the fire, and when I think back on it, I don't remember one word I said, so it had no impact on my life. But the day I turned 30, I remembered playing that game, and as I was pacing up and down, asking for guidance, what should I do with my life? What should I do today? What do I need to do? I'm tired of this, of being a total poverty case. What should I do? This little voice said, remember that ideal scene game you played when you were 22 in Oregon? Do it again. But this time, write it down. Write it down so you don't forget. That's the single little sheet of paper that changed my life. From everything else led from there. I took a sheet of paper and wrote, ideal scene. What would you like? And much to my amazement, what spilled out was, I have a publishing company. I had no interest in business, no experience whatsoever, never taken a course in it. I'd been spiritual. I'd had nothing to do with money. You know? I'd been like St. Francis. And here I wanted to start a business. I was amazed. You know, I have a publishing company, a successful publishing company, that publishes my books. I'd never written a book. And my music. I'd never recorded music. And I have a big white house on a hill in Marin County. I had a little slum apartment in Oakland, California. I'd driven through Marin and said, whoa, I like this place. It's open. And so I wrote that down. And then, of course, doubts and fears just overwhelmed me, just came rushing in. I remember them vividly. Oh, it's way too much, Mark. You want to start a business and write books and do music? And I said, get out of here for a while. I'm going to focus on this. Because I knew there was something else. There was some other thing I needed to remember. And then I thought, oh yeah, and this is my ideal scene. I want a life of ease. I don't want to work too hard. None of this 40-hour-a-week stuff. I never liked that as a kid. I love being an actor and musician. Those are great hours. You never do a thing before 1 in the afternoon. Never. So those are perfect hours for me, which to this day I maintain. I said, that's my dream and goal. I wrote it down. I have a life of ease. I do not work too hard. My doubts and fears said, impossible. Success with ease, impossible. Never been done. And I said, well, I'm going to experiment. That's my experiment. I'd heard of Buckminster Fuller using the word experiment. Look at your life as a unique experiment. Okay, here's my experiment. I want success with ease. I only want to work when I feel like it, which is afternoons into the evenings, not Mondays. I never liked Mondays. To this day, I don't do Mondays. I don't do mornings. I got up very early for you people. I'm not a morning person. You're welcome. I appreciate that. So that became my goal. I wrote my ideal scene. From that, I realized I had a list of goals. Start a publishing company, start writing books. Then I'd read these wonderful books in my 20s that helped shift me around money, by Catherine Ponder, because she was a Unity Church minister, and she wrote books on prosperity. And that's where I got the phrase, in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And that's where I learned about affirmations. So I took each goal and rewrote it as an affirmation. I'm now creating a successful, profitable business in an easy and relaxed manner in a healthy and positive way. I'm now writing wonderful books in an easy and relaxed manner in a healthy and positive way. I made a list of my goals as affirmations. To this day, I carry my list of goals as affirmations with me and pull it out on occasion and read it and keep it in mind. Repeat them enough to keep it in mind so your subconscious, or you could say your spirit, grabs hold of it and shows you exactly how to get there. To this day, 34 years after my 30th birthday, I still carry this around in my pocket. It changes. I've changed my goals. And the most important change came, I don't even remember exactly how long it was, but my first goals were, I'm building a successful publishing company. Then I realized, oh, what I really want is spirit, awareness of spirit every moment. What I really want is inner peace. So I realized my number one goal is spirit flows through me every moment with its healing energy. I'm guided by spirit, doing God's will. I offer no resistance to life. I am at peace with what is and filled with grace, ease, and lightness. Every moment I feel my being. This is enlightenment. That's what I'm affirming. I'm affirming my way to enlightenment. I'm affirming that Spirit is with me every moment. Because, of course, that's who we are really. We are beings of Spirit. I think it was Teilhard de Chardin that said, we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. That's who we are. The physical experience will pass away. The spiritual being will never pass away. There's nothing new in any of this, of course. It's the perennial philosophy. We published a beautiful prose version of the Bhagavad Gita, written over 5,000 years ago, one of the oldest things ever written. And in there it just says with such authority, it says, there never was a time when you didn't exist. There never will be a time when you won't exist. 100 years ago, most people would just say, what have they been smoking? We're not all one. We're obviously very separate. I mean, I cut my finger. You don't bleed. You know, it's obvious. We're very discrete, separate beings. Then scientists have come along and said, we are all one in this vast quantum field. And even a microbiologist I was hearing talk, who studied your actual physical body, and he said, there is no place where the tip of your finger ends on a molecular level and the so-called outside world begins. There's this constant fluid field. We really are in one great quantum field, and we really are one great body of energy and information or spirit. That's what we are. So the spiritists, the spiritual people, have seen what is for thousands of years. And it's wonderful. It's good news. The word gospel means good news. The good news is we'll live forever with the stuff of stars. And we are all one. And we are guided by spirit. And when we ask for that guidance, we receive it. Ask and you will receive. I asked for a lot. I said, I want to have a lot to share with the world. And the Spirit has given me a lot. God has given me a lot. In my little slum apartment, I had this picture of me walking around a big white house on a hill with a great view in Marin County. Now every day I walk around my big white house with a view in Marin County, and I think, I just imagined this very clearly the day I turned 30. I imagined this and just took the next obvious step in front of me and kept taking little steps. And every step is a little step. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. And each step is a small step. I never had to make any big scary leaps. I never had to do any big scary thing. It was just all very obvious. As soon as I took one step, the next step became obvious. And then the next and the next. So that's, I can sum up what I know in one sentence. One sentence with a lot of semicolons. Dare to dream. Dare to dream your most expansive dreams. And pray for that dream. Pray for it. Ask and you shall receive. Write down that dream on paper. Make a simple written plan. One page is all you need, a one-page plan. And start taking whatever step you can. Keep the end in mind. Begin with the end in mind and keep the end in mind. And keep praying, asking you shall receive. I once wrote a poem that ended, We are the creation of the forces of life, an eternal blend of ecstasy and strife, living as long as the universe stays, which is forever, through the galaxy's nights and days. From the Big Bang's beginning to the black hole's destruction is but a day in the life of our cosmic construction. We'll live forever where the stuff of stars, ever changing, ever growing, born into this life, born into that, changing this form for the one that comes next, an eternal part of an eternal creation, a quintessential piece of divine revelation. That poem just spilled out one day. I even had to look up quintessential to see what it meant. And I'll end with a bit of music, because I was asked to play, and this spilled out too. I was going to bed one night and I sat down at the piano and did a few chords, and then I went to sleep, and in my dreams, a verse was sung to this song that I had just played. And I woke up, and this voice said, write it down. And I said, no, I'll do it in the morning. It said, no, you won't remember in the morning. Get up and write it. And so I got up and wrote down a verse. I went to bed. Another verse was saying, I got up and wrote it down. I went to bed. Another verse was saying, 8 verses. The song has 8 verses. And I woke up the next morning thinking, I did something in the middle of the night. I hardly remembered what it was, but it involved scribbling. And there was this song. And so it really came through a dream. And I know you're all aware of this, but the more you grow, the more you become aware of your dreams. Because Spirit does guide us in our dreams. Our subconscious mind speaks to us so clearly in our dreams. And many dreams are just mundane, working through fears and working through all kinds of things. Dreams are our therapy. That's been proven. There are those special dreams, those spectacular dreams that remind you of who you are. The wonder of who you are. The wonder and power of who you are is right there in your dreams telling you. And in a way, that's what this song was for me. And it's about surrender. And even when I came, I was like, surrender. Well, then Eckhart Tolle came along with The Power of Now, a book I published and a book that has lightened my life. And he talks of surrender and how wonderful it is. And what he means is accepting what is. Accepting what is. It's not negative in any way. In fact, it's sweet. Sweet surrender is a key to real enjoyment of life, happiness, and real inner peace. And that's what the song's about. So I'll sing it to you.
Teach me, oh teach me, sweet surrender. Teach me, oh teach me, now. Show me, oh show me, blessed inner wonder. Show me, oh show me how. I pray to deeply understand sweet surrender. May I have the wisdom now to know. know what things can change and have the strength to change them, and to see what things cannot change and let them go. May I forever know sweet surrender. May I learn what it means to be free, to be free. May I live in love. May I remember everything has its beauty, but not everyone can see. Blessed are the beggars wandering in the streets. Blessed are the sick and poor yearning to breathe free. Blessed are the young and old, all brothers and sisters. Blessed is all humanity. All life, all humanity. Blessed is our sadness. Blessed is our joy. Blessed is our longing and our pain, our pain. Blessed is our discontent. Blessed is our bliss, that which falls and that which rises again. Blessed is the seed, the force of creation. Blessed the destruction of all created things. Blessed is our separateness, for we're divided for love's sake, in order to be united again. I pray to deeply realize sweet surrender. I pray to have the heart and eyes to see that good and bad and right and wrong and pain and bliss and all are all branches of the very same tree. They're all one in their real identity. They're all one in truth's infinity.
Thank you very much.